You're listening to Trash in the Can, available on oneofus.net and maybe Grindr.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
This is turning into the boomer nostalgia hour, whatever. But do you remember there was a grocery store in Arlington, and I think this was a thing elsewhere, but it had like almost like a little clubhouse sitting somewhere near the front of the store inside that had a TV playing cartoons all the time. And it maybe had some like
dump the kids off.
Yeah,
and go do
dump
your grocery
the kids
ship
in this room that will hold maybe a handful of them and sit and watch TV while you're getting groceries, which seems like a crime waiting to happen.
Right. That was not at the grocery store I went to as a kid, but I can totally see that being a thing.
Yeah, it was that. It had like a really shittily painted Flintstones characters on the outside, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had one of those. It's a vending, not a vending machine, but that like a candy egg thing.
Yeah,
you know,
we put in a
coin, but it had Fred Flintstone in the middle of it, this plastic thing, and I went and looked it up on eBay. That was apparently a huge thing in the 70s, and I guess the store we were going
just
to had one
on
left
to
over.
It. Yeah.
Oh. And it was where you could put a coin in and get an egg with a little Flintstones character,
and
it would make a noise. You'd go, yabba dabba doo.
Yabba dabba doo.
But yeah, they go for a lot of money on eBay, apparently.
$20. I mean, for him, because he's lost his job, so.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I did. I really did.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit. I'm sorry to hear that.
Like, completely out of the blue.
Wow.
And a lot of people that were 5 year, 6 year.
Shit.
And it was the weirdest thing. It was like 90 seconds. And I was, because my manager very abruptly quit. So, yeah. 5 years and just like, bye.
You could say it's not honorable to work there.
Yeah.
The company.
Pretty crazy.
Yes.
But so yeah, I'm living on fumes until my unemployment kicks in, which takes like a month.
He's been here quite a few times.
Hey, what you cooking?
Hey, are those Triscuits? I fucking love those.
Could you tell Bailey to bring over those cookies, please? I haven't eaten dinner since Wednesday.
Well, yeah, like last night, me and Emma, we went to the liquor store. We were going to go home and watch some movies. And she's like, get whatever you want, baby. Like, all right, now she's got the upper hand now.
You ever did?
True.
Oh no.
Yeah. Oh, and my dad was in an accident, but he's okay.
Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah, it's been a busy few weeks.
I guess so.
Yeah, and I had bees.
And welcome again to Trash in the Can, where we watch bad movies because this is a kid those homosexuals want to adopt.
Our show?
Yeah. I'm Eric Samaniego, and with me as always is the big pussy to my Bobby. I just finished The Sopranos, everybody. It's really good.
Why do I have to be
right,
big Sulek. Pussy?
I don't know. You're a big pussy.
And you are a Bobby.
I am a Bobby. He dies with his toy trains. Oh, spoilers for this 25-year-old show, sorry.
And I die like a bitch on the fucking boat.
Yeah, well, you get to die in a boat rather than around things you love. Like if I was my Muppet collection and somebody blew me away.
So you fucking hate boats.
I do hate boats.
Do you hate boats?
I don't care for them, really. Like, I don't hate them, but I'm just like, I'd rather not.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you gone sailing before? Fuck that.
So our guest, Baylor.
Hi.
Returning.
Yes.
For I don't even know how many times now.
Five?
Maybe five timers club now.
You look upset. So.
That's the appropriate face.
When you
face.
Said five, I've never seen you frown that way before.
Actually, that is the face that everyone makes after they've been here that many times.
Oh, Christ.
Like, yeah. Because it's too late to never do it again. You'll look like an asshole. You said yes once. Yeah. We'll always take a mile. Now, Baylor, what are your thoughts on sailboats?
Fine.
Yeah.
I don't like being told what to do, and also being told what to do about things I don't know what they're called or what like I'm supposed to
do. Wait,
when
you
them.
Go on a boat, are people like, hey, grab the flank shaft?
My grandfather, he was just like, hey, the flank shaft?
Grab okay.
Get the skirt steak. Get that real quick.
Grab my digging. Are you ready to talk about that with your grandfather?
God help us. Maybe in this movie.
Well, I don't know. So this film from 1996, very indie, low budget. Mm-hmm. It's called Raising Heroes.
Yep.
Now, the writer, director, producer is someone who has a... Is it a web series or a movies?
So, the guy who made this went on to do Bear City, which is a series of films. They're full-length movies, but okay. There's been, like, four of them. Mm-hmm. And they were, like... I think the first one was just, like, an independent movie. And then I think the second and third one were, like, crowdsourced and then released online.
So still independent movies.
Yeah, but like, in a different way than this movie
yeah,
was.
Yeah, like a Zach Braff sort of way.
Right. and those are... I've seen the first one... and it's a just sort of like a kind of charming little indie dramedy about like a group of gay friends and lovers in kind of the bear scene in New York. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, one of the main characters, the sort of like gay couple at the center of this movie, one of them is a big guy. And I was kind of charmed in this movie, by the way. It was just sort of like, hey, one of the guys in this couple is just a big guy.
Yeah, and like, yeah. It's never really a source of levity. There are
like
a couple
there's a
of
couple
moments.
Of little jokes, but it's never just sort of like, oh God, fat ass. Like it's yeah. never that.
It's just a fat guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think I am jumping to some conclusions here. I assume that has something to do with the filmmaker's taste in men.
Yes. Well, I
wait,
did see,
Bear
so,
City didn't tip it off?
That actor is one of the executive producers of
oh,
Bear City.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I was charmed by that and little else.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I was...
Was that the main character's name? Little else?
Because there is, growing up having cable and IFC, you would see queer cinema of the 90s, yeah, indie, yeah. And usually if it was either tragic
right.
or it was kind of... quirky and not very good.
Right.
Like you had an Adam and Steve movie, I remember. Yeah. And
well, there's like But I'm a Cheerleader. That was like the big one that came mm-hmm. out.
That
in the
was 90s. That, I or think got closest to breaking through to mainstream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But this, it was marketed as like a gritty action movie where it's like a kick-ass revenge. These two guys are
take on
wrong.
The mob.
They're wronged in some way. It's not yeah. really clear in the trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
And we get that in maybe the last 15, 20 minutes.
Right. Up until then, it's just one of the guys making really inexplicable choices them dealing with them trying to adopt a kid. And then, yeah, in the last... And meanwhile, there's kind of this parallel thing happening with the mob, mm-hmm. and it doesn't really kind of affect the central story until the last 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the choices are very grounded in 90s indie cinema,
big yes.
dreamlike.
The editing.
Yeah, the camera work where we're doing fast motion through the city watching traffic yeah. while voiceover narration is happening. I feel like man. I've seen that so many times in certain kinds of movies.
Yeah.
And even kind of like the little prologue scene where there's a crime that our protagonist witnesses, mm-hmm. it has a lot of like bootleg knockoff Tarantino Scorsese thing of like, oh, these like tough mob guys like bantering in the car.
They love to talk.
And it's clearly trying to like go for the aesthetic of that without understanding what makes it good. And it kind of sounded like improv.
Yes.
Bad improv.
Where they're repeating back what the person said to give themselves a moment.
Oh, yeah. You want me to go fucking shoot the guy? Yeah, I said go fucking shoot the guy. All right, I'll go fucking shoot the guy.
You want me to fucking shoot the guy? Okay, if you want me to fucking shoot the guy.
It was turning a little bit into almost an Abbott and Costello routine. Like, what? You told me to fuck? No, I told you to fuck him and you kill him. And it's like,
yeah.
And it goes on for so long. And there's so much of this that is reminiscent of the worst kind of movies we do on the show, where it's Manos, Hands of Fate, do something.
Right.
There's just long stretches of watching someone walk into a building.
Yeah.
Walk up the stairs.
Or contemplate. There's so much contemplation.
There's a lot of fucking thinking and waiting.
Even, and that's the thing, it would be one thing if we were watching somebody just turn over something in their head if we could hear it, because they do this sometimes in the film with so much narration.
Sometimes.
But there are scenes, but there are scenes where we're just literally watching a person think with no context.
The loudest kind of crappy industrial music.
Oh, yes. Tell us about the score.
Oh, my God. Okay, so opening credits. well, first of all, so there's the opening scene with... there's these, kind of like mobster guys, and one of them is sort of this cool hitman type, like goes into a deli and shoots a guy in the head and then shoots the cashier.
Yeah.
And a guy who we're going to find out is our protagonist, like kind of walks in the door, sees this happen, and turns around.
Now,
and then,
Baylor, does he run in terror?
No. He's like holding like a big portfolio briefcase.
Right.
And he kind of like stops and he sort of turns around and he just sort of toddles off, like occasionally looking over his shoulder. And then he's just going down the street. But then it like,
he walks as fast as a fucking penguin.
Yes. And then like this really intense, industrial music starts playing and the opening credits roll. And, at some point in the like music playing during the opening credits, I said, was that a drill? And one of the like central instruments in the soundscape of Raising Heroes is just a fucking hand drill.
It's like, vroom!
Yes.
Vroom!
It's like, it's called industrial music, but it's not, you don't actually have to make it sound like we're in a factory.
Like in an industrial site.
Right.
The music is by Fractured Cylinder.
Fractured Cylinder.
Fractured Cylinder.
Which definitely to me, just given the whole vibe of the movie and then like the trajectory that our auteur goes on. It clearly it's just like some friend of his who's in the like underground club music scene in New York. And it's not terrible.
Some of the beats were actually not bad.
Yeah.
Like until the drill comes in, I'm like, okay, I'm kind of fucking digging
this. Yeah. Like it's like, not bad.
And then like, it got better.
Yeah.
Hey, kids at home, it gets better. That's the lesson of this movie.
But yeah, even though this is New York, I guess it's during the, quote, cleanup.
Yeah.
He witnesses a crime and does not at all act in a fearful way.
Doesn't even jaunt away.
No. He's just sort of like, oh, guess I'm not getting a sandwich.
And so the...
Wait, he's even complaining. He's like, you didn't get the milk? Oh, Nerf gun.
Yeah, so he walks back home. Now we do go back to the killers.
But first, when he like leaves, we get the opening credits, and then we get like 8 minutes of narrated flashback over like...
all shot on like a...
8mm. Like home movie footage, which like even then, I realized probably the whole movie was shot on like 16
or something like that.
And you just wanted to keep that film look. But even in the 90s, home movies would have been shot on VHS. Like, whatever. It's fine.
Yeah.
But it was
trying to do almost dreamlike-esque.
Yeah.
But then sometimes you're like looking at the camera. I'm like, okay, whatever.
It felt like definitely a choice.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And it was sort of setting up the relationship. He's got a partner, Paul.
And Josh.
And Josh
is the screeny guy.
Yeah,
skinny guy.
His name. Paul is kind of the chubby guy, and Paul had a friend who had a kid but then got leukemia and died. Mm-hmm. And they have been
in her will
he was gonna be the father, like adoptive father. And so they were like on the precipice of a court hearing to like get custody.
Yeah.
And that is what in theory sort of like informs the drama of like the next hour of the fucking movie is our protagonist is afraid that if he tells the cops that he saw a murder, that will somehow fuck up his chance of adopting this kid.
Well, it's like all you gays get involved in really bad, crazy shit.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I don't understand where he's coming from because he at no point.
I thought I was trying to figure out again why in the living hell he never went to the cops, and I think that he was thinking. And funny enough, like all of it is so tell and don't show that he never once said like, "Well, I'm pretty sure they're with the mob. I don't want to get hurt." Like he had some trepidation around like, "Oh, yeah. I don't know if we should do this because it might get hurt. Like it might come back to us or something like that." But like.
Right.
Again, it's fucking New York. Like, yeah. Granted, I know Texas is a really large state, and like, I don't know how in the hell we just happen to run into people like, oh, wow, we went to high school together. How do we do that?
Yeah.
But like in New York, it's like, eh, you lost them. Like, yeah. They're gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it was funny because, yeah, he...
was like, look for the skinny gay guy. Like, what?
He's afraid to tell anyone what he saw, but he's also afraid to tell the audience because we do not understand why he is not telling. So, so after... Okay, we've established that it's they're seeking adoption.
Yeah.
Now, is this... Do we go back to the crime scene first?
We go back to, like, right afterwards as he's sort of not really running away witnessing a murder. He goes.
Oh, and one of the guys who was like the lookout.
Yeah, he's like there was a witness.
Yeah, yes. When the gunman gets back in the car, and then we have what feels like six more minutes of you tell me somebody fucking saw who you somebody fucking saw.
Yeah,
and they overfuck. They overuse.
They overfuck. No, it's clearly to establish that these guys are bad. They're having the like mob guys just constantly say fuck,
which is weirdly like puritanical for a queer indie movie in the 90s. Yeah. But you know.
But yeah. So then it goes back to him, and he's walking home, to like meet up with his partner and the woman who is like
the caseworker. Yeah,
because
right.
We've established because he speaks to his fella, the big guy at work, and Paul. She's coming over at 2:30. Like, oh, I'll try to be home at 2:30. So while this is happening, though, we do see then that woman in her office.
Oh, it's like doing
a coworker.
Yeah, again, this kind of non-linear.
And I was very confused by because I thought that was a different woman, but you guys are like, no, that's the same.
Yeah,
like,
right, again, it's kind of trying to do this Tarantino non-linear thing, but like cutting back and forth.
Which, okay, so this is 96. Pulp Fiction, when did that come out?
94.
93, 94.
92 or 3 was Reservoir Dogs. 94 was Pulp Fiction.
That's right.
Okay,
yeah,
so this movie definitely could have been inspired
informed
by that.
By yeah, that. Yeah, yeah. The woman who's like the caseworker. Is like in the scenes cutting back and forth between their apartment with the kid and the office. In the scenes in the office, she's being like shitty and kind of homophobic with one of her coworkers, and is like,
and the coworker,
she said the thing about like, oh, this is the kid that those homosexuals want to adopt. And then later said something about like, I bet they're waiting until the hearing's over to bring out all their sex toys.
Tight shot of each mouth.
Yeah.
And that, okay. There were really a handful of times when I was like kind of impressed by the filming, at least.
You know, because
most of it was so generic and
a lot of it is really pedestrian. But
yeah,
like
just like
there would
coverage
be moments of like, oh, you're trying something.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
Like it would have that was an interesting shot when it was like did you be sexual,
right?
And
it's just like
on the mouth.
Yeah, and some experimental, almost chaotic camera work when there's moments, which is very few and far between.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But like, yeah, trying to just sort of add some more like dynamism to what were pretty bleh action moments.
What I was going to say earlier, when anytime there was like contemplation and there's no dialogue and it's just a person thinking, a lot of the time it was like either a medium or a wide shot.
Yeah.
You're like, what am I fucking looking at here? Like, I wish it was doing more inserts or having more close-ups on the person's face and just like, what the fuck do I do? And like the audience, I was like, go the fuck up, police! but at least if you see that close, you could see them working it out other than just like, I guess they're just loading a gun?
Yeah.
What the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So they meet the caseworker.
They meet the caseworker at the house.
And so I keep forgetting the names. The skinny guy is
Josh and then
Josh,
Paul.
The big guy's
okay,
Paul.
Josh shows up. They're in the kid's room. They're and the woman is being completely friendly,
fine.
Professional.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is why I was confused at first that
It
was the same person.
Yeah. Yeah. I forget the kid's name. No,
Nikki. And the thing is, like, the reason there's this caseworker involved is that the dead friend, the kid's mom's mom,
that's right,
is clearly homophobic, because in that like 8mm scene, there's like an insert shot of her like snarling and pawing at the camera because she's an evil witch.
Just only appearance of that character.
The only appearance of that character.
Insanely evil.
And it's like, oh, she would not accept Nikki going to live with some homosexuals, so she's suing for custody.
Right.
Yeah. And she's a drunk.
Yeah,
we hear that.
Drunk.
She's a drunk. And
Now,
we do hear that Paul, when he's talking to Josh after the caseworker leaves, that, you know, she had the nerve, because when she shows up, she mentioned like how well the grandmother gets along with the child, and like, well, when she's sober.
Yeah.
And a few other things.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, he doesn't want to tell her off because they need her to be on their side.
Yeah.
And but also importantly, all this time, all this is going on,
He just witnessed a double homicide.
And is acting totally normal.
Is acting totally normal, hasn't said anything about it.
Great actor.
The character
is a great actor.
Layers to this film, yes.
But and so yeah, in the meantime, the couple end up having a little playful Nerf gun fight to blow off some steam. After
they finally got out the toys, you know.
Yeah, they got out the toys.
And that was a really cool gun. I know you had.
I had one of those. It's like a six chamber thing with like
Gatling gun thing,
yeah,
right? I know you're just thinking, man, I really want that.
I want to play with that right now.
They still make Nerf guns, right?
I think so.
They're insane now. They look like real guns, like snipers.
Which is exactly what we need.
Yeah, exactly.
More trigger happy cops running across kids. Oh no, an acorn fell on the car.
Jesus Christ.
Ripped from the headlines.
Topical. Come to Trash of the Can for all your juicy cop killing needs.
Whoa.
Good Lord.
Jesus.
So back to the movie, I guess. Our protagonist like has to drive his friend into town.
Mm-hmm. Well, his friend Tom is always the nicest guy. And anytime
downstairs
he wants a ride,
neighbor, I think.
Yeah. And they drive into town, and then our protagonist goes to visit his friend in Jersey.
Oh, but before this, we establish that the mob
they
know that somebody went to the cops or snitched on them.
Yes,
yeah. And they think it's that guy.
They assume it's our protagonist, but it
turns
out.
I don't know how
they
find him.
They
follow him.
Okay, so that's the only time that makes sense where they know where he is, because later in the film, it's like they're fucking Kreskin.
Well, okay, so I
don't know what that
means. The amazing Kreskin. He was a psychic and a magician that used to be on the Carson show. He's alive. He's on Twitter right now.
They do a version of him on Late Night with the Devil.
Oh, the amazing. Okay. Yeah, he was on the Carson show a lot.
That character's great. I will give the movie a little credit because when we're introduced to the rest of the mob guys, there's like the guy who was the lookout. He's always dressed in a tracksuit.
Uh-huh.
There's Tony, who is the eating pasta all the time. He's the boss.
Right.
And then there is Vinny, who's the guy.
Vinny, and then there's Vic, is the gunman.
Who's the gunman.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple other randos.
Yeah.
And like pissy and hungry and sleepy and dopey. And
Gummo.
And so we're introduced to them. And then again, it's one of those things where it's just like, okay, let's take a left turn real quick. At some point we are introduced to Vinny, where he is just like
having a flashback.
He's sulking.
Yeah, he's sulking like by a bridge somewhere. A big red light is flashing on
his
face.
Yeah.
That's right.
And he's having a flashback to a moment where he is in an abandoned bar. Clearly a gay bar, by the way. There's like paintings, murals on the wall of like cowboys in like assless chaps and stuff.
Well, it could just be a Western
bar.
Sure.
Bar. Yeah, Western theme.
I've been to plenty of gladiator themed bars. It doesn't mean it's gay.
I love how even your gay stereotypes are from the 70s.
Kreskin, gladiators. This is why the kids tune into the show.
Got that Gen Z audience. He has the flashback to he's having like an argument with his lover, his partner.
Yeah.
And then the guy, Vic, who is the gunman from the deli, comes in, gets into an argument with this guy and shoots him.
Yeah. He's just like, don't you know who I am? And you're like, no. And then the lovers is like, fuck you for treating me like an asshole all of a sudden. Like, what the fuck's going on? And he's like, this is who I am. And he shoots him.
Which they refer to him as his lover in the film.
Yeah.
And that feels like an incredibly dated term. Like, nobody refers to their partner or spouse as their lover,
no.
right?
No. And also there was a couple of times where the mob referred to Paul, the main guy's partner, mm-hmm. as his friend.
Yeah.
That's right.
I don't want to get into specifics, but your friend, your long-term roommate.
Yeah, there's a lot of 90s euphemistic language.
Yeah, but they're talking about it like it's Laurel and Hardy, right. Your buddy.
I do appreciate, though, just how, again, serious they're taking their side of the story. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's like, oh, they're a married couple. Like, and...
Well, I mean, yeah, queer filmmaker, so you're going to have some... That was the only thing genuine about the movie.
Yeah.
Was the relationship that those characters had.
Right.
In yeah. those moments when it wasn't, you know... Watching somebody think. Yeah. It was like, yeah, they're a couple.
Yeah. It was kind of nice and charming.
Yeah. And you don't see movies of that era doing that very often.
No.
So then Vinny, he's the one, like, at some point they're all at the table with the mob boss, like, someone dipped off the cops.
How do they know?
Well, because they got word from the streets. And, but the reason why
another
that
thing
happened,
to gloss over.
Yeah. But we find out that it was Vinny who did that.
Yeah.
And I was is kind of interesting.
Well, at first we think it's revenge because they killed his partner.
Right, right.
But we later find out I guess we can wait.
Yeah. Oh, there's another.
Don't want to spoil.
But there's another reason he tipped off the other cops. So I'm bad at secrets.
Man, yeah, you really are.
I am.
So the main character goes to his...
Josh.
I keep on forgetting which one's
Josh
and
Paul. Can we just say Twink and Bear? Because yes. I'll remember that.
Simple enough.
All right.
Twink goes to his friend in Jersey and, like, I think does mention that he witnessed the shooting.
He tells her everything.
Tells her everything that has happened so far.
Whoa, those are two separate situations.
No, the second situation hasn't happened yet.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
This is where they're just hanging out because she's the only person he says he can trust.
Yeah.
Other than
his
bear.
Yes. but it's cutting Pooh back bear. And forth between, like, him having this, like, casual conversation with his friend about this murder he witnessed while they're folding her laundry, and the mob interrogating the, like, neighbor. Mm-hmm. In the, like, courtyard.
Oh, the guy that had
the
ride.
The courtyard behind the apartment building.
Mm-hmm. And it was Tony's son. Okay, so there's a moment where this other rando guy, henchman, mm-hmm. Tony, the mob boss, like, hey, I want you to take my son on a job.
His first job.
And he's like, okay.
And he's, hey, stick with me. Do everything I say.
Yeah. So the job is to go up there and...
Find out
what's going on.
Find out which unit is the...
Right, that's right.
Right, and they saw our hero, Twink, with this guy.
Yeah.
And so they interrogate him because... this was also confusing because, he had established that
he was getting a ride to downtown.
Right,
and now he's
going to Jersey to see
apartment.
His friend. And he walked all the way from Midtown.
Yeah.
and he was only there for... He's almost immediately back at the apartment.
Yeah, he looks very fit.
I mean, you know, still he would have broken some kind of a sweat.
Yeah.
But he's immediately accosted by...
And knowing how people walk in this movie, he was probably just like...
But yeah, cigarette-smoking mobster and then the Don's son.
Son, yeah.
Start interrogating him.
Yeah, and they get the information from him and then kill him anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of the, like, few moments, again, of this sort of, like, little visual flourishes. You think that they're done with him, but one of them turns around and smashes him in the face, and there's a big... splatter of blood
on the lens. Yeah.
Yeah. And we get an overhead shot of his body being dragged across the courtyard.
Yeah.
Goes on for a while.
And so then the mob boss's son goes into Twink and Bear's apartment.
Oh, wait. Before that, he's like, okay, so you're going to go up there and you're going to go and kill him and then, you know, come back down. It's like, and while that's happening...
Oh, he's fidgeting with the
silencer. He cannot put on the silencer on at all.
And it's, again, it's like a minute-long shot of him fidgeting with it.
It's so fucking crazy.
Is that meant to show that he's nervous about
his
first?
No, he's inept.
Or he's inept?
I think that's because of what ultimately happens. Like, oh, he's inept. He's not actually ready for this kind of thing. The rest of it.
And, like in most mob movies, like the lead, there's always a young hothead,
who
gets himself killed.
He goes up there and he's just, you know, he's in the bedroom. He's waiting for Twink to come back in, and he's just kind of fucking around, like he's like smelling the cologne and like, you know, looking at their taxes, like, oh, they're late, and then finally Twink comes in. This is a really poorly done, like, action scene in a lot of ways. But, like, Twink comes in and he looks to his left because the Don Jr. guy is next to like one of the bedside tables, and he's like, "Oh,"
and then they kind of like grapple for the gun for a little while,
right?
And then
there is a standoff at the other side of the bed.
On the side of the bed, and we've established that there's an open window on the side of the bed.
All right, because he throws a cigarette.
He throws a cigarette out. And
this movie's layered, guys.
Yes. And then
I love they're like, "Thank you for noticing the details."
We did. And
we
then
just didn't appreciate
them. The Don's son like lunges for the gun, which is on the ground, and so Josh like lifts up the mattress.
He tries to pull the trigger.
Oh, that's right.
And then it doesn't go off. And he's like, "Oh, fuck." And then he does.
Then
gets
the mattress. Then he lifts up the mattress.
Which is unclear. Is the safety on? Because it's loaded.
Safety on, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
You don't know guns.
I don't.
Well, but that's established in the car, is that like the safety's on.
Oh, right.
When you see him, take the safety off, cock the gun, and shoot.
And the director again is like, "Thank you."
But so then, yeah, Josh like takes the like mattress off the bed, shoves it into the wall, which knocks the Don's son out the window. And the little interesting visual flourishes, they clearly like dangled a camera from a rope and like lowered it down to kind of get a POV shot of
the trash
spiraling
can.
Down to where the trash cans are from like four stories.
That would have been great if Oscar the Grouch was like, "Ah!"
Not again.
So at this point, our protagonist has witnessed a double homicide, been the victim of a home invasion, and killed a guy.
And he is hungry for some dinner.
His partner walks in, and he's, like, stashing the gun under his, like, waistline. And he's like, I'm ready for dinner. Let's go. Like, just doesn't fucking say anything.
It was so confusing.
Again, incredible actor.
But when he immediately started to fix the bed, when he heard the door open and put everything together, it was so unclear as to why he just would mention, "Oh, my God, this man was in our home."
Yeah.
Why would he hide? What's the motivation?
Right. Like, I don't understand.
Again, he doesn't want to fuck up the hearing. He thinks that.
How would that fuck up the hearing?
Well, because it's like, "Oh, two gay guys getting into some trouble."
Or I guess like this is an unsafe environment for a child.
That too. Yeah. That's probably what it is.
I mean, it's a reach.
It is a real reach.
I mean, all the toys, all the murder. I mean, it's pretty unsafe.
Yeah.
Regular night at John Waters' house.
So then they drive to the Poconos. They're going to have just like a little weekend getaway.
Because his friend says, "You know what you should do? You should take a little getaway.
Yeah.
Go to that place as a giant."
And you said you knew this place.
I'm familiar with this place. It went viral a few years ago and then again last year. So they have a big heart-shaped hot tub in the room. But the like selling point is it's a big champagne glass that you can get in. It's also a little bathtub that you can make sweet love to your partner in. And it's
lover,
you know, but
friend.
Yeah, it's feature.
I'm very fond of you.
your roommate.
Your great roommate.
All those pictures of historical figures kissing or letters that are really horny. Like they were very close. But yeah, so familiar with that place. But what I didn't understand. So he said, "Hey, you're ready to go to dinner." And I guess Bear falls asleep in the car immediately. And he's like, "You know what? We didn't pack any bags. We didn't plan this. We're driving straight to the Poconos because I just need to get us away from what happened."
Yeah.
The first, like, good thing that he's done so far, like, it was like, yeah, get the fuck out of there as soon as possible, but still.
But get
just,
out
like,
of there and then call the fucking cops.
He could have done an anonymous thing.
Yes.
Yes.
He's a dumb man.
Yeah, remember, because don't ever talk to cops unless you have a lawyer.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have a tip, you can do it anonymously.
For God's sakes.
Although, I guess there's no payphones anymore. How do you do that anonymously? Because can't
they
track
at the time, they had payphones.
Yeah, but like right now.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
What should our listeners do if they witness a crime and don't want to get involved?
Use a VPN to call the cops, because in Texas now, you cannot actually
watch
Pornhub.
You can't go to Pornhub.
Oh, my God.
I started to pull up some of my backups, because Pornhub was not my thing. But I went to some of...
Pornhub was not my... I'm not a, you know...
I'm a man of taste.
No. I was more of a spank bang guy. And then that didn't pull up, and I was like, what else? X-Hamster. No.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
So I'm like, I gotta get a VPN, because now I'm having to, like, do very specific Google searches. Siri doll roommate POV.
They did do some research recently. It was like, all of a sudden, VPN searches are just like how to do it and what how to get them, like, skyrocketed
of course.
In Houston, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio. And so anyway.
So we're all very frustrated here.
Backed up. So Now, at the same time, cigarette smoking man henchman who yeah. was with the Don's son, who you know saw it, and you know he also thinks he's like he's in fucking big trouble because he was supposed to chaperone
right.
the son, and he got this fucking son killed on his first job. So like, so he's just like you know telling them like, hey, by the way, your son died, and I'm not.
But we're cool, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. I'm not going to go around there because I'm pretty sure you'll fucking kill me,
right?
And they're telling him like, okay, they're in the Poconos.
How do they know that? He was the guy who was there supposed to be fucking tailing them,
Baylor, right? You got to really ask. Stop asking stupid questions. I mean, for God's sakes.
But yeah, so he decides.
This is the moment when it's like show don't tell. You're like, wait, what? like, I think you should have told us.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah. So he goes and follows them to the Poconos and then doesn't fucking do anything. We don't see him until the morning after. But I will also say, going back to, you know, when we were in the Poconos, first of all, there's a little scene kind of where Josh?
Twink.
Yes. Is like clearly sort of like sad and thinking about it all and Bear. Like
Cannonballs.
Cannonballs naked into the hot tub. And they have like a little kind of tender scene together. And again, it was just sort of like charming because it was like, oh, this is sort of nice.
Like yeah. all their scenes together yeah. are genuinely great.
Yeah.
And even, like well-written.
Even yeah. queer indie movies of this era, you didn't see fat guys no. and little guys. It was yeah. always, if anything, two beautiful men.
Yes.
And the yes. they had maybe a friend that was sort of asexual, right. but also gay.
Yes.
That was fat.
Yeah. But so then, they, you know, kind of fade to black. Presumably they have sex and then
in the champagne glass
in, well, but then in the champagne glass, mm-hmm. Josh with the oh, fucking fractured cylinder drill music, just like going to fucking 11 is like holding the gun, dismantles, like takes the silencer off,
he knows
pulls
how
out
it.
The bullets. Puts the bullets back in, reassembles the gun. It takes like 10 fucking minutes of him just like, and there's, again, no narration. There's no way of understanding why this guy is making these inexplicable
and
choices.
Those are the shots that are all done in mediums and wides.
Yes.
Where you're just like, I get it, but it's shot so poorly and boringly
yeah.
that like, I'm not getting like the pathos of that he's going through right
no.
now. Like,
he's not a
fucking... Get closer to him.
Right. Yeah.
And he's not a good enough actor to pull that off anyway.
No.
But also the fact that it goes on so long. It's... You could have fucking, you know, Laurence Olivier, and it's not going to read if you do this for 7 minutes.
No. Yeah, like, it's...
The movie was about 90 minutes long, and I kind of wonder if he was, like, trying to get to some, like, festival minimum.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Because I think the movie, without the longer takes, would have been maybe, like, 60 minutes.
60, 70 tops.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is, you know, obviously only going to be playing at festivals at this time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think this made it to cable.
Probably
back
not.
Then.
Probably
and,
not.
Couldn't find any information or background or anything, but I'm assuming, yeah, definitely festival movie that he was having to pad out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would make the most sense.
And so then, yeah, we cut to the next morning. They drive back to the city, and cigarette-smoking mobster guy is tailing them.
Yeah.
Even though he said, when he got the news from somebody that they were in the Poconos, oh, damn, that's going to be an hour.
He got the exact address of where yeah. they would be and then yeah. didn't fucking kill them in the Poconos.
So he drove all the way out there and just, like... Waited until the next day.
Napped in his car.
I would have killed to see an action scene in that hotel room.
You called a shot that I was like, I sure as hell hope that happens. That like someone was going to get shot and fall into
the champagne
glass bathtub.
That would have been fucking amazing. But I bet like they rented it and they're like, well, we can't actually like shoot in here.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so unfortunate.
I mentioned this when we were watching it, but you know, staying in hotel rooms, you know, people are doing weird things in there. But if you go to a place that's specifically romantic couples,
right.
fucking the heart-shaped pool and everything, do you ever think about that when you're in a hotel room? I sometimes think about that when at your, and I hate to bring it up, but at your mother's funeral, the hotel that we stayed at, the bed I was in, on the wall, directly on my side of the bed, was a greasy handprint.
Are you sure it wasn't yours?
No, no. It was there when we got there. I have a picture of it still.
It was probably my mom's ghost.
Getting railed? No. Getting railed? You know, it's never complete until, you know, one of us talks about a dead relative.
Or just my dead relatives.
Well, yeah, mine are mostly
you
alive.
You have more of them.
I have the most dead relatives.
If this was a contest, you would win. And having known some of those relatives, maybe you did.
Oh, God. Jesus Jesus Christ.
She did thought you'd be thinner.
Yeah, the first time I met his mother, she looked at me, and that's when I was actually thin. She goes, "Oh, I thought you'd be thinner."
Out of the gates.
First words to me.
She was that mob mentality. It's like, I got to bring him down immediately.
Oh,
like, you need to know your place right now.
It's like prison.
She felt like anytime she was talking to you, you felt like it's like, I guess I'm in like the prison yard right now. and it's like, I guess this is how it goes. And it's like, walk on eggshells around her and then, you know, give her some Coke or whatever, and then you're fine.
But yeah, so I guess it was one last way to assert herself over me. Was like ectoplasm handprint on the wall next to me. But ever since then, I always think about, I always inspect the bed carefully when I get into a hotel room. I check for bed bugs, too.
Well, see, I also stay in nicer hotels.
Well, so do I.
Congratulations on having a job.
Thank you, Baylor.
You know what?
I'm not a deadbeat like this guy over here.
Hey, I'm not a deadbeat like your family.
Oh. My sister's literally like, wow, this got real dark.
She's not listening. Anyway, so they're in the Poconos, but now they're headed back and being tailed by Smokey McGee.
Now I don't understand, like, where did Paul go? Because, like, Twink goes up.
They go to the friend's house.
Yeah, Nicole.
Yes, they go back to the friend's house.
But it's also not clear what happened.
It's a little vague.
He's suddenly in Nicole's apartment.
They drive up, and then a cigarette smoking man follows them.
But it's just weird. Why didn't Paul go
up into the friend's house?
Obviously place. Does not like him.
Right. She doesn't like gay people. So.
She does make a fat joke.
Crazy psychotic gunmen are like the two people who make fat jokes in the whole movie.
Which, like, that guy, it's like, okay, yeah, he's the bad guy, but right. Why is your best friend making fun of your spouse's weight?
They're talking about, like, you should take him to the Poconos,
the place.
But if you have sex in the champagne glass, it better be reinforced.
Which I mean, it's
an observation.
Yeah.
I mean, he's large.
He's a big guy.
Yeah, he's big.
But also, but, like, you know, she doesn't like the way fat people smell.
They do have that twinge of just...
They?
Oh. Is it he? Sorry, I want it. Oh, them.
Sorry. Oh, no.
Just, you know, a little like... I'll stop. It's a little like corn nuts and wet newspaper. Anyway.
Fuck. What happens in this movie?
Okay,
so he's
up talking to her, now he also mentions to her, oh, by the way, I also killed a guy who broke into my house.
Crazy, right?
And he's like, I should go to the cops and tell them everything. So, no. Just tell them...
Those are two separate situations.
Two separate situations. And is she telling him to talk about the home invasion?
She's telling him to talk about the home invasion, but not witnessing a murder at the deli.
Right. Which is... Nicole seems like a terrible friend.
Really bad friend, actually.
I'd say a dumb friend.
That's why Paul stays in the car, is because he's like, your friend's a fucking idiot. I'm not...
She's going to make his folder laundry.
I've tried to be civil, but... Like, I'll just sit here and nap.
Crack a window and I'll be fine.
They'll leave me a little bowl of water and some kibble and I'll be fine. But then cigarette smoking guy comes and abducts Paul from the car. And it's that's one of the scenes where
the camera
like all crazy, like, handheld, like, whoa, this is happening in frame. And now we're looking at the fucking sun and it's just all
it's
over
real
the place.
Bad. It
felt very 90s.
Yes.
Or just inept.
But yeah, definitely like gritty 90s indie movie.
Yeah.
It was really, I hated that. It was making me nauseous. And I was like, I think I sort of know what you're doing. But like, it felt like you were running and you didn't know what to do. Like, oh my God. And like, you're constantly almost dropping the camera.
But like,
just fucking hold it, dude.
But
like, what are
like
you doing?
You said, Baylor, that it's to give some kinetic energy, some dynamic
right.
look to
Dynamo
scenes that will otherwise look really flat.
Yeah. So they hustle him into the car. Eventually, Josh comes downstairs and sees that his partner is missing.
Mm-hmm. His lover.
His friend.
Gets
a call on it. Well, what happens on that call? Because then he goes home and he gets a message on his actual
Well, he goes home trying to figure out, like,
well,
maybe...
Well, that's confusing.
Yeah.
Because he does get a call. And also, it's one of those things where it's a movie where it's perfectly timed with him coming outside.
Yeah.
That the phone rings. Yeah, yeah. He picks it up and we watch him look concerned, but we don't hear what's happening. And then suddenly he's back home and he has a message on his answering machine.
Now, yeah. Okay. So here's what I also think that was happening at the same time. So he comes home and he sees the message and it takes for fucking ever just to like press it. And he's about to leave again because like, yeah, we got your boyfriend, bitch, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's about to leave.
They do say bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's about to leave, and then Cigarette Smoking Man is inside, and they're in a little standoff.
Yes.
And
But before that, after he gets the voicemail, we get another, like, three-minute scene of him contemplating.
Yes.
And he's, like, crying and, like, touching photos on the shelf.
That's right. He kisses his
and
finger.
Playing and, with the gun again. And, like, I said that the last 20 minutes of this movie is sort of gay Taken. But I'm trying to think of what the particular set of skills this guy has.
None. I can think of one.
None.
Which seem to be crying and contemplating.
Those are two skills?
Those are two separate skills.
I have two separate skills.
I'll weep and I'll think.
And then you'll fall asleep because you're so bored.
But yeah, so I then, could so say then that the guy...
And then he's about to leave, and then Cigarette Smoking Man is there, and they point a gun at each other. And, okay, so it's always... You've seen it time and time and again where the main character, the hero, or the victim is like trying to reason with one of the bad guys was like, mm-hmm. It's like, I don't want to do this. And then the bad guy's like, just come along. Everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the craziest part. What ends up happening in the scene is like, wait, he's for real?
Yeah.
Because the Cigarette Smoking Man, this, I guess, knows like he's not going to put down his gun. He's like, look, how about this? We'll go to the boss. Everything will be fine. And he's lowering his gun down.
Because he's saying, like, I didn't see anything. I didn't snitch after he's accused of it.
And he's like, I actually believe you.
I believe you. Yeah.
And he's just like, wait, what?
Right.
And
I still think that was a trick.
Well, but no, I don't think it was. Because then what happens in the scene is like, well, then why did
voicemail that he got or the message on his answering machine said, meet us at the ninth floor of the parking garage. Right.
And he's like, what are you talking about with parking lot? And that means they fucked over the Cigarette Smoking Man, the mob did.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, wait, what? And then that's when he realized it. And he's like, fuck. And he pulls up his gun and then Twain kills him.
Yeah.
And I thought he showed up because he wants to save face with his boss. Like, look, I killed
exactly
the guy
what he's wanting to do.
That killed your boy.
Okay. There are a couple of moments again in this movie where I really do give it credit where you are giving motivation for characters that honestly don't need it.
Yeah.
But you're like, oh, that's kind of an interesting little twist.
If only we had motivation for like our main character.
Like
you got the kid.
Given that like a lot of the crime stuff, the mob stuff, like I said, feels like just sort of knockoff mm-hmm. sort of Scorsese, Goodfellas mm-hmm. slash Tarantino shit where it's just like, oh, these guys are fucking crazy. And then they talk about it like it's no big fucking deal. But there
that
were
Carol Channing is interesting.
It sounded like when she was presenting at the Tonys with LL Cool J.
Again, doing the hits for the Gen Z audience here. But yeah, like there are moments of like actual, oh, this is something. You're like making an interesting choice and like,
yeah,
it's not all bad.
It's not all bad. And then
mostly bad.
Mostly bad. But then we go to the garage and then it's hungry, pissy and sleepy and dopey.
Yeah. And they're staking out the elevator.
And Vinny's there too.
Yes.
Yes.
And
Vinny is the guy that his lover or his friend, his roommate was killed.
Right.
By Vic.
Right.
We got to break you of this lover thing so you don't start saying that in real life. Oh, nice to meet you. Are you his lover?
So are you two lovers?
Are you
scanning for words?
Roommates?
So how do you two know each other?
What's in the producers, the gay director in it's his common law assistant.
Yeah.
I always love that one.
That's pretty good.
That's really good.
All right.
But yeah, so they're staking out the elevator. And then there's an interminable moment where like there's the elevator is coming mm-hmm. and then it ends up open and they all have their guns pointed on the elevator. Mm-hmm. But it turns out it's just some random woman.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was Nicole.
Oh, was it?
It looked just like her. The best friend.
But why do you think that?
It was her.
Okay, but why was she there?
It was a diversion because our hero, our twink, comes up behind the car.
I didn't read that at all. I
didn't read that at all either.
Else.
I thought it was just someone else.
No, I thought it was her, and it was a diversion. That's why he was able to sneak in.
But then she shows up again. She's like, good job.
Yeah.
Again, that's this movie.
Yeah. So while, I guess, if it was a diversion, this diversion happens. Mm-hmm. He, meanwhile, goes, sneaks her up around the car and puts his, like, gun up to the head of
Vinny. Because Vinny didn't get out of the car.
Vinny didn't get out of the car. And that is where we find out that Vinny has been an undercover cop this whole time.
Ooh, right.
And arranges for Twink to pretend to be holding Vinny up. So that they can, like, kind of have a standoff with the other guys and then pull out their guns and have a
finally a fucking shoot off.
Yes.
This is at least 3 hours into the movie.
If that 3 hours into this, like, 87 minute movie. Yeah.
If that had not happened, where Twink snuck up and they struck a deal, basically, when he admitted he was a cop.
Yeah.
Was the cop just going to sit in the car while that Twink was murdered?
Probably.
I guess.
Like, I don't really understand how undercover cops work.
He was trying to think of, like, what his next moves were, and then he was like, well, I don't know what's going on with this other fucking story. And then that happened, like, well, this is my opportunity to fucking take revenge, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah, I guess so, yeah. Because he does bury his fella's body. Like, there's a flashback
of him,
and he reaches into the trash bag and pulls a ring off and stuff, so we have a couple of moments of him, like, agonizing.
Yes.
Yeah. Couple of moments?
Well, a couple of hours.
So they kill all the other dudes.
Yeah.
And it was kind of bloody.
Yeah. It was actually, there were some moments
I appreciate when squibs, at least back in the 80s and 90s, when it was not just like chest or head or something like that, where it's like
arms and legs.
Like, it's just fuck. Because like anything of the extremities, like your limbs getting shot, like that must have hurt in the characters. Like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And
I definitely don't get that from the chest.
It wasn't like one or two squibs. Like, it was a lot.
Well, the last one is fucking RoboCop.
Yeah. The ending is pretty intense.
Yeah.
But so then we cut to Paul Bear is tied up in the kitchen of the
Italian restaurant.
Of the Italian restaurant that the mob boss is, you know, runs, I
and
guess.
He's like sitting on a stool and his arms are in front of him.
I love that, like, this movie takes place over the course of like 3-ish days, and the mob boss has just been sitting in like the private dining room of this Italian restaurant the whole fucking time.
Eating spaghetti.
I assume it's a like Crimson Loaf situation where he doesn't ever have to get up from the table.
I mean, that's my goal. And if I were running the mob, I would be sitting, eating pasta.
Pooping.
I'd have a hole in my chair.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
The burgundy loaf.
Burgundy loaf, that's what it is.
I was like, crimson, what?
The burgundy loaf.
Yeah.
Mr. Show thing.
It's like, it was like, we have no bathrooms here. Too sweet.
Yeah.
Or it was like, Tony!
Yeah.
He's like, hey, I'm Tony. I'm going to.
He just like shuffles a little thing under the chair.
I hear something quacking.
The crimson loaf is what I call my hemorrhoids.
All right. Well.
That's the sound of me sitting.
Then we have the kind of intense, like fast paced montage of
it's like, we gotta go get him.
Yeah, like the camera is like on the hood of a car.
Yeah,
like at a low frame rate. And
Vic, the guy who committed the murders at the very beginning, he is like just being shitty to Bear.
Right.
And saying, like, have you seen a gun like this before? It's huge. And I've never seen a gun before. And he's, and again, loading the fucking clip. Like, I hate in movies where they're having to load a clip sometimes. It's like, how are you not already prepared?
Right.
You're a murderer.
Right.
Like, what are you doing? And I don't care if you're just like, I got to load 6, not 5.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's just being shitty to him, and that's when he, you know, makes fun of his, like, sexuality and being fat, and like, okay. And
but, which, you know, it's one of those things, like, we got to make sure that the audience hates this guy, so he's going to do the worst thing.
Yeah.
Not because he's a murderer, because he's a bigot.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, in movies, that's how you differentiate.
Right.
But what does he say? Like, it's a shame you won't live long enough to take care of that weight problem.
Yeah.
Which is also like a weird way to call somebody fat.
Yeah.
You could have just called him a slur.
Right.
But instead it's like, it's too bad you won't get to deal with whatever trauma caused you to gain that weight.
I was really rooting for you, but you got yourself in this situation. You know, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry you're going to die before high intensity interval training is invented. I think it would really work for you.
Actually, on the side,
you don't really have
trainer.
To change your diet. It's just some lifestyle changes, and you change the way that you exercise.
One day,
but you're never gonna find that out because it's 1996.
One day, there's gonna be a thing called Ozempic.
The celebrities are gonna love it.
I saw Tracy, not Tracy Jordan, Tracy
Ullman.
No, Tracy Morgan. He was saying that he out-eats Ozempic because he started taking it and he gained weight.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
So then we're in the car with Vinny and Josh.
Right.
And it's like, they're kind of getting ready. Basically, he's like, okay, I'm going to go in there. And it's like, we're not taking any hostage. We're not going to call the cops or back up.
Because
like,
there won't be any arrests. And what did you say that the tagline was on IMDb for this?
Now the gays have the guns.
Yes. And so it's the two gay guys are going to go come and kick ass and solve the problems.
And Vinny doesn't.
He fucking fails.
I've never seen a gay guy fail more than that. Because he walks in there and they're like, and right before he walks in, all the other, like the Tony,
they get
Mom
like
Boss
another
and Vic,
call
and they're
it's
like,
oh,
Vinny's a cop?
Vinny's a cop?
Oh, shit. Okay.
How? Who? Where? What is this information?
God. Sort? God is on their side, guys. God is on the mob side.
Well, the Westboro Baptist Church was right.
So,
hey.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Hey, those people I hate, here's some info.
He's a fucking cop. So,
hey, remember, only fish
Vinny,
on Friday.
Vinny walks in, sits at the table, and as the dramatic irony ensues, mm-hmm. where we're like, oh, fuck. You're in a sort of dangerous situation. And so the tracksuit guy and Vic and Tony are there. And they're basically just trying to interrogate him about, like, how did it go down? How did you kill Twink and
right.
the other people? And he's like, is it going to be an open casket or a closed casket?
Right. Like, side of the head, front,
and
back
again,
of the
it's
head.
Just like, oh, man. He's like, I bet Quentin Tarantino would be so proud of this. I was like, it just reeked of that. It's
yeah.
like, and now granted, it's not terrible. It's just the way that it was executed. It
yeah.
was like, I get what they're doing, but yeah. it's just, it's not shot well. It's all like, again, medium wide. And like,
and he says, you know, it wasn't either. It was in the back of the head. And then that is when Vic,
mm-hmm. he takes a phone call.
Well, they pretend. Because tracksuit calls the number of the restaurant, I guess. Hey, go get that.
Yeah.
And he goes off.
Goes off and then he comes back and shoots him, ironically, in the back of the head.
And yeah, you see it coming where he's like, yeah, back of the head. And then
and boom. That's the signal.
When they were in the car earlier, it was like, you know, wait till you hear my signal. What's the signal? When you hear gunshots, that's the signal.
Yeah.
And which is a terrible signal.
It's a terrible signal.
And that means it's too late.
Yes.
And at that point, when the guns, when he gets shot in the head, Paul Bearer goes full Hulk and just basically sits up a little bit and just demolishes the chair that he's sitting in.
Just with his large size.
large size.
Is able to just like bust out of the duct tape and ropes tying him to the chair, destroys the chair. And, you know, you made a mistake. You don't want to fight someone on their home turf, and they fought the fat guy in the kitchen. I'm allowed to make this joke.
Yeah, but there are different levels of fat. And is it still problematic if the person's a lot fatter than you?
Just like fighting me and the kids, like, and I twirl my knives all of a sudden, like I'm really good at everything. It's like
the source of my power.
Well, it's two drumsticks that you've sucked the meat off of, and your teeth have sharpened.
Sharpened them into play.
Let's dance, skinny boy. All right. So at that moment as well, that's when Twink busts into the front of the restaurant, has two guns wielding, and just like ba 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 ba. And like
what we've been waiting for the whole fucking movie and what was advertised.
Yes.
And in the meantime, the mob boss like runs into the kitchen.
With a tracksuit.
Yes. And Paul kills tracksuit first.
Mm. Oh, yes. Sorry. Yeah. He bashes Tony, though. The
With a wine bottle.
Which is great. I love that.
All this action stuff, not bad for like a movie of this caliber.
Totally. Yeah. It's all like low angle shit, though. It's just like, okay, I guess.
And it's like a little bit slow-mo just so you can kind of see all the details. Like it's there's again, visual choices being made that are kind of interesting.
Yeah. Sure. And Paul throws tracksuit on like the fucking island.
Like a kitchen island. Yeah. And then, like
Shoots him. Takes his gun out of his pants and just like boom, 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 and like shoots him all over in the chest. Oh, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And then he and the mob boss get into kind of a scuffle. Because
the mob boss reaches for a gun that's on the ground.
Right.
Yeah. And like the mob boss does shoot Paul in the shoulder.
Uh-huh.
And then fucking Paul
just like unloads a clip in the like guy's belly. There's squibs like blowing out of the small of his back.
Yeah, this is fun.
It's gnarly.
Yeah.
And but in the meantime,
and so it's just like this like chubby guy with like, you know, black eye makeup and you know, a little bit of blood smear down his nose and stuff in like a vest. Just like
it's bum,
90s, bum, bum, bum.
90s fat. Yes. Right? He's in a vest and slacks.
It's great. I was really, it was like, oh man, I wonder if he's going to like bear hug someone to death. In the meantime, in the main dining hall.
The only one left is Vic.
And Twink.
Yes.
And like they're on other sides of the room. Like he's like, and they're
hiding behind pillars.
Yeah. And Vic is like bad. But he's like, you coming to my house? He's like, yeah, this is my fucking house. And he's like, you hear that gunshot? That's your boy. He's getting killed right now. And then they go at it. They're like trying to shoot each other. And at that moment when they're both like trying to shoot each other, or Vic is like coming around the pillar, Paul comes from the kitchen and shoots Vic in the back of like the shoulder as well. He goes down. Twinkie comes, like does like a fucking Matrix move.
Yeah. Just like leaps out from the pillar. John Woo.
Dual wielding guns. Yes. And shoots him in the leg. And he's like struggling to get to his gun. He gets the gun. He has both guns. Twink does. Mm-hmm. And fucking RoboCops his ass.
Yeah.
Blows him fucking away.
Brutal.
Yeah. It's great.
He's like laid out on the floor on his belly.
Like he's already been shot but isn't dead yet.
Oh, and yeah. Then just all over his body.
Yeah.
Which there was something we didn't mention. So the undercover cop that slumped over at the table, he also takes a bullet. So they went through the trouble of adding a squib.
A squib onto
the... Yeah, like a stray bullet. And that was great.
I love details like that. Yeah, totally. The movie is... It has some details.
I think there's a 45-minute version of this movie.
There is a 45-minute.
That works.
Yes.
I believe that.
And they get... they embrace...
Yeah.
It cuts to the flash forwards.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, we do another kind of like home movies montage. They get custody of the kids, or of the kid. And like in voiceover narration, he says basically, and then I learned a lesson about communication.
Yeah.
Again, that's the moral of the story.
I never lied to Paul again.
That is the moral of the story. Be honest with your partner, Eric.
Jesus Christ.
So I'm going to ignore that and explicitly state to the audience it was about my ex-wife. Well, one member of the audience specifically. Anyway, that brings us to recycling.
You know I edit this,
where we take elements of this movie. And turn it into something better. Now, straight up, does anybody have any ideas?
I only had a part of a thought. Was when
is that what happened?
Is that what happened? That's why this smells.
Thought.
Well, yeah. It's like I was like Eureka. No, I was like, okay, the Sesame Street can be in this, like the Muppets.
What?
I don't know.
Oh, because you said Oscar the Grouch earlier.
That's about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my thought was okay. A big guy in a vest made me immediately think of Dom DeLuise. I brought up earlier. So I'm thinking that this movie is Dom DeLuise, who in his life was closeted.
Mm-hmm.
It's not official, but what I've heard is that he was asexual and leaning towards gay.
Right.
Yeah.
But he did have like a bunch of kids and loved his wife and everything, and she's a great lady. But This is his coming out film. 1996, he was alive, still working.
The most important part, he was alive.
Hey, I mean, with my references, yeah. This
is
an
actor.
It's
the newest one you're going to get, guys. Yeah,
this is an actor who could have been in the movie, theoretically.
He was a skateboard at the time, though.
Oh, God, skateboard kid. Yeah. That's a way old episode, so don't listen to it, because the actor from the movie we interviewed did not remember anything about it.
And did not want to talk to us about
it. It's like me doing the show. I don't remember anything about this.
And it's like me doing the show. I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, boy. So you're our Dom DeLuise, I guess. But so, Dom DeLuise in a film in the mid-90s. So this is like when Ellen is coming out.
Yeah.
So it's a big studio picture that's gay and is going to be a Yep, I'm Gay, like her cover of, was it Time Magazine?
Is that the title of the movie?
Yeah.
And that's the movie.
Yep, it's, I'm Gay?
Yep, I'm Gay. At like, you know, with a Dom DeLuise laugh. And the logo has a little parakeet on it because he always had one on his shoulder in late life.
Yeah.
And the lover, the spouse, the partner,
yes,
is Dom DeLuise's longtime screen partner, best friend, Burt Reynolds.
Okay.
So
well,
we're doing like
on,
a spinoff
guys,
of the, cannon,
guys,
the Cannonball Run.
On. This is so good.
Yeah.
So it's like the Cannonball Run spinoff.
Oh, my God.
So it's these two best friends, but they are playing a couple.
Right.
And so that opens us up to the whole group of actors in that friend group.
Uh-huh.
So we got the lead mobster is now played by Charles Durning, another good friend of Mr. Burt Reynolds.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
We've got, let's see, Ossie Davis, who was in Evening Shade with Burt Reynolds, as the trigger-happy gunman.
Yes. Which it would be a very like different role for him.
Oh, yeah, completely. Because he was...
He's always just the nicest person.
Yeah,
in
I mean,
every movie.
As a stage actor, he had more range, but in America,
yeah,
in movies, he was always the friendly, black, non-threatening mm-hmm. person. But so, yeah, we open it up to actually, oh, you know what? No, the mob boss is not Charles Durning. He's one of the henchmen. The mob boss is
Bruce Vilanch?
No, no. You're getting close, though. One of the best friends of Burt Reynolds for 30, 40 years. Was Charles Nelson Reilly. Charles Nelson Reilly is the mob boss.
I just like kill to see this movie.
It's perfect because he never left the center square and the mob boss never left the table in the restaurant.
Yeah, completely. This is where we are.
Wow, that's inspired.
Ruth Buzzy is the social worker.
Yes, or who's the friend? The friend of Twink. Oh. Wait, who's Twink? Oh, Burt Reynolds.
Right. So the friend of Twink is, LaWanda Page from Sanford and Son.
I just came. Like, this is,
because she was
so
also
good.
In that circle.
Yes, that's so good. That's so fucking good.
So that's my save.
Yeah. Oh my God, Burt Reynolds gets to be an action star and Dom DeLuise?
Has Burt Reynolds ever double-wielded pistols?
You know,
maybe
for all the action stuff he's done, maybe, but I don't think so because I don't think that didn't become a thing in movies
until the 90s.
Yeah,
because we did what was it, Rent-A-Cop with him and
Liza Minnelli.
Oh man, that was fun. Yeah,
but she's a hooker and he's a cop, and
boy, it was great.
You know,
but
I don't think so because the action movies he was doing were those redneck action movies, which were very car focused.
And
there was no
like
gunplay, really.
Car stunts.
Yeah.
And if he ever like wielded a gun, it was always like a big, like dirty, hairy, you know.
Right.
But yeah, he didn't really do guns on screen ever.
No, he wasn't.
Not really. I don't think so.
It was all car stunts.
That's really great. I love that.
Because otherwise, the recycling is, I would love a story about a gay couple that, you know, Bear, Twink, that go like face off against the mob, maybe instead having like their kid kidnapped somehow.
Yeah.
Like
or
that kind of thing.
They already got the kid.
Yeah. And so the stuff that we liked about the movie, the action sequences at the end, as clunky as they were still like, there's some good meat there.
Yeah.
So something like that, where we're doing a payback, that movie payback, a version of that with a gay couple. And the thing is, I love movies where a fat person gets to kick ass.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a big Star Trek guy, but I've seen the original movies.
Uh-huh.
And Scotty is the big guy.
Yeah.
And in part 6, where he's already elderly and very heavy, at the end of the movie, I'll never forget, it gets a kick in a door and pull a gun or phaser or whatever on somebody. And it's like, Hell yeah.
So it was because I was thinking about more of a, I can't believe in a lot of ways that hasn't been remade yet, where, you know,
well, remade, nobody knows what it is, but
well, that too,
but if we live in a world where we could make a studio movie with a couple like this, yeah, in the leads,
right,
an action movie.
I was kind of thinking about Dan Levy or Levy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he would be kind of good as Paul.
Sure. You know,
like him writing and directing this.
Yeah.
And then I don't know who would be, no, not Paul, Josh.
Yeah.
And, who,
yeah,
but who would be Paul?
I don't know. There's not a ton of like chubby.
Guillermo.
From, oh my God!
What We Do in the Shadows.
That's a really good idea.
Oh, that's
I don't
so
know
good.
His real name. I'm sorry.
No, Guillermo Diaz. I think
that's the character's name. What is his?
But
Guillermo de la Cruz is the character's name.
Right.
What the fuck is Guillen? Harvey Guillen.
Yes.
Okay. Harvey Guillen. Yeah.
Who I saw at the airport, and he seemed lovely.
Yeah.
You saw him at the airport?
Yeah. I was flying out for a thing, and there had just been a convention in Austin,
comic convention.
So
he was there for that.
Man, but,
so he would be great because I think he has such great acting chops.
And here's
layers.
The thing is, like, he's also, like, on What We Do in the Shadows, like, I follow him on Instagram, and, like, he does all of his own stunt stuff. Like,
oh, really?
He's, like, very physical as an actor. Like, he can do action shit.
All right, we cracked the code here.
Yeah.
And the kid
that's
would be
a lot better than mine.
Jason Tremblay would be the kid.
Wait, Jason Tremblay, who's that?
From The Room.
That kid is too old now, I think.
I think he's still a child.
The Room was, like, 7 years ago.
I don't know about that.
Although I also don't think children should be in movies, so we should have someone who's probably legally an adult
now.
After I watched Quiet on the Set,
oh boy,
reminded me like, yeah, kids should not be in show business at all.
No.
Did you watch that?
I haven't. I want to, but I also
it's
don't.
Heavy.
I want to have seen it.
I mean, you could
I want it to be already over with.
You could probably read an article and
get
the gist
of
it. Because it is grim.
Yeah, I've watched a lot of YouTube, just like the 10 most, like the 20 most shocking things. You're like,
fuck.
There's 20?
Only 20?
Yeah, and then they have like another 20. Like,
Jesus.
Oh my God.
Jesus.
We'll never get to enjoy Head of the Class ever again.
But
Carly, more like, why Carly?
Oh no. God, that was my niece's favorite show when she was a kid. And I feel very naive because back then it was like, oh, these kids are probably fine. It never occurred to me because we were in the 21st century.
Exactly. Well, and like I feel like that sort of Nickelodeon live action scene sort of happened after we aged out of Nickelodeon.
Yeah, we had all that.
We had all that, but prior
Roundhouse.
To that, it was mostly
Kenan and Kel and Roundhouse, and
but it was mostly cartoons when we were a kid.
Yeah.
So I didn't ever really think about kind of the live action situation.
I just happened to, you know, have nieces and nephews at the right age. And I remember because she loved them and I would watch them with her and they were, you know, not good. But in the same way, I see all that. And it's like, even as a kid, I wasn't really into that show. I didn't think it was funny.
Yeah. I remember when all that started streaming, like Elliot and I watched an episode of it and it was like, oh, it's not good.
Not at all.
It's just like, it's like bad SNL. So it's
like
SNL.
90s SNL.
I would love to see a director behind this for the recycling for what you're talking about. Like Jeremy Saulnier, the guy did like Green Room and Blue Ruin.
Yeah.
Just like
really
hardcore.
Lean into kind of the grimy action.
Because it is surprisingly, for what we've seen up to that point, brutal. All the blood and the squibs and
all
everything.
All the last like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It, like,
it comes
hide that shit more often and like don't hide from it.
Yeah.
And just like, oh fuck, the stakes are super high.
Yeah.
And that's what that director does very well. And and also build tension.
Yeah.
Because like,
and what doesn't build tension is watching people fucking contemplate.
Yeah.
With the drill.
Like it's the director didn't know like pacing and editing very well to build that tension. And it's unfortunate because I think we all would agree that we see a good movie in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's there.
Yeah.
It's just like, you just didn't
do it.
You didn't do it.
The filmmaker wasn't ready. The country wasn't ready.
America just isn't ready for raising heroes.
And honestly, one second, gladly, they're ready now.
Yeah.
More than ever.
I think
more than ever.
Yeah, I would love to see a film like this made today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My that's actually that my recycling was going in completely the opposite direction.
Straight movie?
No. Like the thing that, you know, we talked about actually finding kind of charming and like human and relatable was all of the kind of relationship stuff. Uh-huh. And so the recycling for me is just the movies that this guy made later, which is Bear City. Mm-hmm. Right. Sort of like just charming indie soft soap opera dramedy about like gay couples dealing with normal shit, like, because that was the most human and normal and relatable part of the movie. As
good.
Much as I enjoyed all of the kind of like visual flourishes and sort of like attempts at doing the kind of action stuff, it's clearly not the director's wheelhouse, and he clearly figured that out and went in that direction with his career. So my recycling is a cop out by saying the director should make the movies that he made anyway.
So it's just a couple going to the Poconos for the weekend.
Yeah.
No, but that, I mean, you're right to say that. Like, they're the
Thank
the best.
You.
Yeah,
I am right.
Sorry, right?
Don't agree.
You're wrong.
Don't agree.
But right. Yeah, the stuff that I guess, I've seen. We did see some clips from Bear City just because we were trying to figure out who the director was and all this on the YouTube channel. And watching it, and it did seem very, like, not quite CW.
No.
But like the bits we saw was like, okay, they're all at a what is it, a suds or
foam party,
a foam party, and like it is very lighthearted and a little
funny bumping into you here.
But it's like, but what about your boy? It's like a little vapid and everything. Yeah. But it's like, it's great that that exists and that this guy did have elements of, I just want to see a couple like me
exactly
on
and
screen.
That's I think is what is charming about the Bear City movies. And again, I've only seen the first one, but I'm familiar with it as
you're not
a series.
Fully aware of the cinematic universe.
Exactly. The
with
BCCU.
Ottertown. The crossover Ottertown and Bear City.
But like that's
Bottom
that's
Junction. Excuse me, Bottom Gulch.
But
Twink Town. That's what it should be.
That's what is kind of charming about the one of those movies that I've seen is that it's like, hey, here's one for us.
Yeah, because you don't see that.
Exactly. Especially in 1996.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Even today in gay movies, you don't see that.
No.
And with this style. Like, to be a Tarantino ripoff-ish sort of thing. It's I think the movie is admirable.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Like somebody that went to film school at that time, maybe, and had those experiences with, I want to make this.
I've seen fucking movies.
Yeah, like, I want to make this something special. And even got things from that era, looking back at, like, Party Girl, which was an indie movie I remember seeing on cable as a kid with Parker Posey.
Parker Posey, yeah.
And that some of the camera work and things feel very, like, okay, the movie's a normal movie to me as a kid. And then suddenly we're, what is going on? What is visually happening here?
We're trying
here?
Something. Like, we're doing stuff.
And I love that.
Yeah.
That was that era when you had, okay, you'd gotten enough money to get actual film stock and you committed to, I want to try this one artsy thing in this movie. These a few things.
Right.
Camera dangling down from the, it's like,
totally,
You literally got the camera, you tied it off with a rope and you just like lowered it down.
Yeah.
I get it.
Like,
I
much respect because I know now we all have access to cameras and we can do whatever we want all the time.
Exactly.
And so then, getting together funding and film stock, all that stuff is such, I mean, a mountain to climb at that time, especially if what your finished product is going to be about a bear and a twink.
Yeah.
At all.
Right.
Like, not even, but it's an action movie, whatever. It's like just having two gay characters, one of them is heavy and one of them sounds like, how did this movie even get made? Who funded
it? Just like the pure like willpower of this guy.
It's interesting because at the same time, the same year, Bound came out.
Mm.
But it's about two women.
Yeah.
For the male gaze.
For the male gaze. And it's like, okay.
And we don't mean the male gaze.
No.
What?
No, you know. But I mean the fact that... But yeah, that's a movie that... Because that was Weinstein's produced that. And they're, you know, that's
and
something they wanted to see.
Bad happened to them at all.
Sure.
Yeah.
They're good guys.
But it's also made by two trans women who weren't out yet.
Yeah, totally. Right. Yeah. But that's the
I
thing
love
is like
the Criterion. It's coming out on Criterion here in the next.
Did they
few
change
months.
The credits?
They did.
Wow.
Well, on the DVD
on
or the
DVD,
Blu-ray.
On the Blu-ray, it says the Wachowskis.
But we don't know if on the.
I don't know if the
like
Blu-ray.
In the film itself, but on the cover. Yeah. Interesting. That's
but cool. So that they were people that at the time because they weren't out were able to get funding because their idea happened to be something that the people in charge, the straight,
right,
hetero
right.
guys,
and
were
they
like,
could sort of pitch it as like this is a like male gaze look right. at queer
and
women.
Even though
and
it's film like noir at the same yeah. time, yeah. yeah.
Like
yeah.
even though it's so totally not that when you watch it, it's so much more.
Yeah.
I mean, even as I remember catching it on cable when I was a young man and not fully understanding what the story was because it's like.
And also, they were better filmmakers. That's right.
Yeah.
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 They were better filmmakers.
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, and wait, was that their first?
First movie.
First movie.
Out of the gate?
That, out of the gate.
It was that?
Yeah.
It was that.
Wow. Did they, I guess, do student films or short films or
surely,
something?
Surely.
Maybe music videos or something like that, because I know a lot of the directors. Like,
yeah, I don't
that
really know much about
that.
Them.
Yeah.
Also, I got to say, while we're talking about them, Speed Racer, underrated. I think that movie's
a blast.
I
love that fucking movie.
Great.
So
that
fucking
is a
fun.
Great fucking
so
movie.
Oh, yeah.
I also, y'all aren't going to like this. I like Jupiter Ascending. I don't
I've
think
never,
it's a good
so
movie.
Trash takeaway.
So I've never
you're
seen
wrong.
It.
You're wrong. That movie is awful.
I don't I've think it's a it. Good movie, but I like it.
God damn it.
Because it's a bunch of big fucking ideas and big swings, mm. and I like it.
And strikeouts.
What? Yes, but I respect it.
No, I don't.
That's totally fair. There are plenty of, I mean, hell, I quoted Haunted Honeymoon earlier, and that's...
Yeah, that movie's better than Jupiter Ascending.
That might be true.
It might be true.
I
it's
like
not
my Jupiter Ascending.
But
I think it's bad. I like it.
No, that's fair. I haven't seen it, but I'm familiar with it, and I heard another podcast
not to see
talk
this.
About it.
Oh, did I do that? Did I talk about that one?
No. It was a
good one.
Was it Blank Check? They
no,
did a Witch House.
We're the bastardized version of that show,
oh,
I guess.
How
did this get made from
made.
Years ago? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We don't speak their name.
Yeah, we don't talk about yeah. them. Yeah.
Yeah, bleep this out.
Yeah. It's like how a Christian scientist don't name the illness. They just, you know, pray about it.
Pray so, no one else listens yeah, to how this get made.
Yeah.
And Paul Scheer is the illness.
Yeah. Yeah, so far it's not working. But trash takeaway. Baylor.
Oh, God.
What did you learn from watching this movie?
I learned that... fuck. I didn't... I thought through recycling, but didn't think through trash takeaway. I learned that you should always...
Stall?
Look at...
Got it.
The... person.
Oh my God.
Who was. I'm going to find it. I swear to God.
This is starting to sound like Viola Davis in The Help. You is smart. You is beautiful.
No, he sounds like one of the improv scenes in the movie. Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, I feel like what I learned from this movie was that you should call the fucking cops when you witness a double homicide.
Yeah, that's good advice, just for anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any murder you see.
Any murder you see, you know.
Single,
what?
Double, triple homicide?
This is not...
Quadruple, maybe?
Oh, well, and also, if there is a guy shooting someone at the deli you're in and you leave the deli, run. Don't fucking walk,
yeah.
run.
Yeah. Yeah.
I learned not to go to that deli anymore. I'm good. I love sandwiches. Could be my last meal, but I don't want it to be my last meal. So, Wright, what did you learn?
Bigotry.
Wait, I mean, you learned how to do it?
What? I don't know.
Bigotry when you're not strong.
Jesus.
Yeah, we don't own the rights to that, so we might have to cut that.
I mean, no. No.
You didn't learn nothing?
I don't know if I learned anything from this.
Yeah.
No,
that's fair. Like,
I really, again, I do appreciate the moments that they were trying to go for sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I learned anything from that, but like, I could see there is talent.
Yeah.
In that director and writer. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that, you know, the budget that they had, they didn't really get to go for broke, but him trying to interweave these like again, contemplative moments where it's like, man, you're just really dragging this down. Because, like, if you are, like, marketing that this is the first, like, gay action movie, and, like, finally the gays have the guns. It's like, okay, well...
Well, give them the guns.
Give them the guns and do it.
Right. Earlier than, like, an hour into it.
Yeah.
Like, if he had a bigger budget, it still would have been a mess. It just would have been a bigger... more impressive looking mess.
Yeah, like the part when Twink shoots the cigarette smoking guy, like that should have been the fucking act one break.
Yeah.
Like just like fucking get this going sooner.
Yeah.
And it's just, man, it just drags so much. And you know, I think that you know, this speaks volumes about editing and
Yeah, you're right. The act structure was not clear at all.
No, it was just very, you know, just all over the place and, you know, just...
Meandering. It was like licorice
like,
pizza.
Like me explaining this.
Like licorice pizza with guns.
Jesus, yeah. I mean, fuck.
And I liked licorice pizza.
I liked it, but it is fucking meandering and boring.
You know.
Like his other post, There Will Be Blood stuff.
What else has he done recently?
He did licorice pizza.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
The Master would be post...
Oh, I did not like The Master.
Inherent Vice.
Oh. The Master is one of those things Thread. Like... The Master's, it's greater than the sum of its parts. Like,
sure.
I feel there are brilliant flashes in it, but as a whole movie, it was just like, I'm not into this.
That's actually, I guess, the only one post There Will Be Blood that I've seen.
Yeah, I didn't see Inherent Vice.
Inherent Vice is garbaggio. It is so boring.
Got Martin
boring.
Short, though, right?
It's got Martin Short, and
or
he's misused.
Maybe the future... Mr. Meryl Streep.
Can we talk about that for a fucking hour and a half, please?
What's happening?
Oh, so the rumor is dating. Martin Short and Meryl Streep are dating. They've been spotted out together.
Oh,
they've gone
God,
to see shows together
it.
At dinner. Because
I have never loved anything more than
because
this.
Because they
right?
met on the...
This makes me so happy.
They met on the set
of
Murders
Only
in the Building.
Murders.
Yeah. And she's coming
God.
Back.
Do it! Okay, okay.
Because he's a widower, and she's out of a 30-year marriage.
Yeah. Oh. So he told me about this, and I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And then I forgot about it for like 2 weeks. And then he brought it up again because he saw them again. It honestly,
yeah, it was
the drinking. It was definitely
he
the drinking.
Forgets.
I forget. Yeah, it was the drink.
I have to put post-it notes so that he doesn't like put his microwave
he tattoos
exactly. in his bed.
Yeah. He killed my wife. He told me it again. I genuinely felt like, extreme joy.
I'm having a moment right now.
Yeah. Isn't that the sweetest thing in the world?
I want this more than anything. I want this for them more than I've wanted anything for me ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, like I saw an interview with him after his wife passed, and since then it's like, I want you to be happy. Someone should make you happy because Martin Short, we all love you. And you
was
make
it the
us Kathy all happy.
Lee interview?
Because she forgot that his wife was dead and asked like, hey, so how's everything? I mean, blah, blah, blah. It's like, how's with your wife? And he's like, I love her more than the first time I met her.
Oh.
And knowing that she was dead live. And this was live on the Today Show.
Right. Yeah.
It's tough. And I haven't seen him cry about it in media. But Steve Martin, I saw cry on CBS Sunday Morning because he wrote a song for I wrote a song for my best friend Marty's wife. And he just starts to break down. And it's like, yeah. I want Marty to be happy.
Yeah.
And I want Meryl Streep, of course, to be happy.
Of course.
And then
perform at the Oscars together.
I just want him to make her laugh.
Tell me something, boy.
In this modern world. But yeah, so on that note, everybody take the idea that love can happen late in life with Marty and Meryl.
Yeah.
And hope that they're together.
Yeah.
And that it works out. And Baylor, thank you so much for being
on the
show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thank
this was a lot
again.
Of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Not enough That's... impressions this episode, but I'm okay with
do
that.
Do you want to close us with an impression, Baylor?
I'll do Willem Dafoe.
Oh, okay.
Whoa.
All right.
The thing about Willem Dafoe is... You don't say anything that's actually menacing. You just say things normally, and something about it is a little bit spooky. Like, I went the other day to the deli near my place, and I got a Cobb salad. They have a really good green goddess dressing.
So when are you going to do Willem Dafoe? Goodbye, everybody.
When the sun start looking finer when the moon is round. My beauty blazes higher.
Intro song Too Easy and outro song Charlotte's Web, both provided by the wonderful White Ghost Shivers. Please follow them on all social media outlets, as well as find their music wherever great music is sold.